Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain Talent podcast. My name is Shubh Fauzdar, the head of training and development for Alcott Global. I'm very excited because this is our final podcast for 2021, and it's also our 10th podcast. So we've hit double digits for this particular channel. And to match the excitement, we've got a very, very exciting guest with us today. So we have Philippa, also known as Pip Benfold, the CEO of People Collider, with us today. Philippa has 20 years of experience in corporate HR, holding senior level positions. And after doing that, she decided she wants to focus on helping HR professionals bring together new technology and people in the workplace. Today, Pip educates HR professionals about the technology shaping Industry 4.0, including AI, RPA, and virtual reality, empowering them to play an active role in creating a human world of work with technology. I loved when she used the phrase for me that I play at the intersection of people, data, and technology, and I think it's such a need of the hour. So very, very welcome, Pip. Very delighted to have you here.
Great. I didn't know this was number 10, lucky number 10. Last of the year. Hi, good afternoon. Good morning, everyone.
Good. So for this particular podcast, because it's the last podcast for this particular year, I thought we'll have some exciting conversations about the future of work. But before we focus here, I would love to hear from you, Pip. You know, you've had a very exciting career journey, and you sort of personify with your career, you know, what we're talking about, the gig economy and, you know, portfolio careers, and you can really craft your own career journey. So it's very inspiring to see you do that. Why don't you share with us a bit about your career journey and what has been your driving force?
Thanks, Shubh. Well, to start with, I tried very hard to be a traditional HR person. I tried doing the right jobs at the right time in the right order. And to be honest, it never really worked out that way. I was always a little bit left of center and not ticking all the boxes neatly and tidily as I was moving up the food chain. What I did do is I focused on interesting, different projects. If there were projects that were typically going to be challenging, I would want it even more. So I was attracted to challenge, but also to adventure. My first posting overseas was to Taipei. I remember I had to check it out on the Atlas to know exactly where it was. But that was after I agreed to the contract, to the opportunity based in Taipei. So I think the opportunities that came up and identifying them and having the courage to say yes. I often said to people who were still back in Australia, you know, I didn't have a great career in Asia because I was more intelligent or even more ambitious. I just had the courage to say yes when most people would have said no. I remember when I was off to Taipei, it was originally for a 6-month contract, and all my colleagues and friends thought I was mad. Like, what are you doing? You've got a great career, you know, great house, great boyfriend. Everything was sort of working out. Why would you want to go away for 6 months? And I said, or give it all up for 6 months. I said, look, worst case scenario, I'll be back here exactly where I am in 6 months' time, and I would have had a grand adventure. I knew I would never be back, and I never was. Even the global financial crisis following close on its heels. So I think for me, it was very much trying to work out how I could fit enough to get jobs, because at the end of the day, we still had bills to pay. But following the challenging work, the challenging locations, the interesting projects, and the great colleagues. And I was very lucky that that took me to a lot of very different places. But about 3-4 years ago now, things started to change for me. When I finished my EMBA, and I could see that the jobs that I wanted 10 years before, while I was, I guess, ready for them, they weren't what I wanted anymore. And it's not because I didn't want the jobs per se, is that I could see them leading to my obsolescence. You know, the whole idea that ladder, you know, that linear career path, and, you know, I've been working for a while, so at the early stages, that linear career path was very real. And I recognised that it had changed. It had changed in a number of areas, and specifically in HR. I knew if I just kept doing the same thing that I'd always done, even though it was, you know, a little bit different, a little bit exciting, I would end up obsolete. My skills, my experience would see me becoming obsolete. So that was the period I thought, right, I've got to get serious about how I bring the ideas of technology and data into my work. And, you know, I'm not your typical HR person anymore. I guess I never really was, but I'm certainly not anymore. But it's not that it's replaced my HR skills. It's just augmented. It's added to them. And now I can bring the ideas of people and psychology and so forth together with technology and ethics and those types of things together in a very different way to what I was able to do before. So I guess if you want to know what has typified my career journey, it's taking the road less travelled, following the challenge, following the adventure, and enjoying the learning journey.
Yeah, and what a place to be in this bang in the middle of digital transformation and technology when the world went through the whole COVID crisis. And it became such a talking point. Everybody was going towards it, but I feel COVID just expedited it. What we were supposed to do in 5 to 10 years happened in a matter of months. So I'm going to ask you some questions about this whole future of work and technology. So Pip, let's use your expertise here. So COVID expedited digital transformation for most organizations, and the way we implemented it, it was more like damage control or stopgap arrangements, because it was like, oh my God, we need to do this. So what are some of the challenges which organizations are facing in this digital transformation race, and which you think might affect their capabilities in the coming months and years as well?
Do you know, it's funny how we all say, oh, it just accelerated our digital transformation. I think it pushed us online, but it didn't necessarily mean that that every company was accelerating the plans they already had. In truth, some companies had no plans, or they had plans that were not suited or focusing on a remote workforce. It might have been in another area. So it did accelerate use of remote working tools, but not necessarily the path of digital transformation that many companies were already on. Some, yes, but not all. So I think, you know, when you look, I look back at a number of organizations, how they've coped and what they've done and how they've used technology as part of the journey. Some, yes, it was very easy. They were trying to encourage more people to collaborate globally using online tools. It was great. The rest of us just died from over-zooming. Zoom fatigue, you know, and all the words that went along with it. But what we had to put in to create this immediate remote workforce was not necessarily a sustainable solution. We did what we had to do to be able to keep the motor running on the businesses, but we didn't necessarily say that this is part of a longer-term plan or an overarching digital transformation strategy. So we threw money in where we had to, where we needed to very quickly get people online to continue work. That changed a lot of how how funds were being allocated to the technologies that people are using. For some businesses that have found it very difficult over the COVID period, it sucked up a lot of funds that can't now be used in other areas. But I think we're getting to that point, or we are at that point, where we need to think about what hybrid work really is. Therefore, when we look at the technology that we are currently using, to question, is it really suitable? Do we need to decommission? Do we need to find more money to adopt more technology or different technology? The sustainability of remote working and a hybrid workplace, I think, will look quite different to the fast and furious band-aids that most of us slapped, you know, the Zoom band-aid on back in the days. It's adjusted a bit, but I think that a lot of companies, this new year is a time to take stock and really question if what we have done or what they have done is where they want to be over the next few years, the tools that they are using and their workforce is using.
Yeah, it's very interesting because companies have to take stock of what they've created in terms of workplace, because a lot of people are, I mean, we are in what we call the great resignation. People have taken stock of what they want out of their work and what they want to go from there. And, you know, one of the most discussed topic in 2021 was future of work. The future of work is here. And, you know, this being our final episode of 2021, I thought it would be very interesting to hear your version of how the hybrid workforce would look like post-pandemic, or should look like, if I could use that term, post-pandemic, to be most optimum for people, for companies, for processes, etc.
It's funny, we've talked about future of work for so long, and this whole future, you know, when is the future arriving? When I think of future of work, I'm always thinking about what is next. And what I see coming up, things like having to deal with algorithmic management, extended reality, it is a very different workplace to what we have today. But you're right, the issues we've got right now are around the hybrid workforce. I think the answer is not a simple one for any company, and the answer is different for every company and for individuals. And I recognize that many HR are trying to balance the desires of their employees who they're trying to prevent from leaving and what is best suited to the work that they're doing. So if we think of sort of full remote or full in person on a continuum, where is work best conducted along that continuum? The answer will be different depending on what it is that people need to work on together, how they need to work on it, and how, you know, the style of collaboration that is most effective to produce the outcome that is required. I feel that HR, and I know that we in HR love to be able to put a policy and rules and, you know, this is how it's going to be. We want to standardize as much as possible, not because we really believe standardization is the best way forward, but it's easiest to manage than of, you know, full flexibility. But I do think that we're going to have to give tools to managers to work out what, for them to work out with their teams, the optimum way of working. Now, if there is a criteria or a checklist or something that we can work through that helps managers determine or decide what is the optimum way of working on a specific task. I've been looking and playing around with a few models. There doesn't seem to be very many around. It's based on, you know, are you looking for innovation? Is the how much technology is being is a process incorporating? How much collaboration from teams? Is that a hand-off? Is it the people in the same team or people cross teams? There's this hands-off of work. There's a lot of different dimensions that make the input, the process, and the output quite different to determine what is the best way to work both online and offline. And when we know what the majority, certainly the critical components for our business need to look like, what are the optimum tools to use? Mm-hmm. They're probably not the tools that we're using at the moment. What is the most effective technological tools? So I think the future hybrid workplace will look different for every company. It will even look different within a company if it has been optimized, you know, for the purpose of whatever that team or department or area is trying to accomplish. How do we balance that with what people want? That's the next challenge, because as we all know, we're all a little overwork, you know, certainly I think the end of year has got a lot to do with this, but the notion of purpose, which it isn't new, but it's certainly come to the fore over this pandemic, everyone questioning their motivation for working. There's not many people I've been talking to lately that are just, you know, could, if there was an opt-out option with everything else, they would be opting out most definitely of the work-life app. You know, understanding and HR, I know I'm preaching to the converted, if HR listening to this, HR are used to listening to employees, to understanding what they want, how they are best supported for work. I think if we get the hybrid work for the purpose of the company right, or the purpose of the team right, it should also be working for the individuals. We don't want death by Zoom any more than we want a death by PowerPoint in the old days. But we do want, and we do need human connection. So getting the balance right is the balance both for the company, for the team, for the purpose, and for the individuals. Not an easy one, but I think an interesting challenge for us all to rise to over the next year or two as we reshape our companies from the band-aid solutions that we, you know, through technology at the problems, to how we're going to adapt our organizations to sustain the change that has sort of thrown upon us over the last few years.
Great. I saw in your introduction and the work you do, you work a lot with virtual reality as well. So, if we were to create a future, maybe we will all meet in metaverse or have holograms of us while we can work from home and pretend to work in office, etc. We don't know. So,
It'd be
just
great.
throwing
I
up
just talked
one
to someone.
question.
Sorry, I was
Yeah,
just
go
talking
ahead.
to someone this morning about designing a classroom, a virtual classroom. And the technology, virtual reality has really moved forward very quickly with COVID. I think it's sort of like the dark night, if you will. It is the technology that has really come forward in leaps and bounds. Hardware costs have decreased. I think there's a lot of issues that we need to resolve. I wouldn't say that a full virtual immersive experience is the best for an extended period, but the notion of extended reality, a combination of augmented reality and so forth, can be very helpful for us to bring people together, whether it's in a classroom or a work, that collaborative team that is spread across the world to be able to bring them around the same table to work on the same model in the center of the room. So, great,
Absolutely. And you touched
exciting stuff.
exactly. And you touched on challenges. And with the workplace changing, something we've not been used to before, we used to do it sparingly. And now we have so many interesting possibilities which are coming in front for us. It also presents ethical challenges. What are some of the challenges that you foresee talent leaders, both in HR and business, will be facing and should already start thinking about them as they evolve the whole workplace?
Great question, Shiv. Two key areas that concern me. I'll touch on the first one very lightly and then go into detail in the second. The first is algorithmic management. If we think about our workplaces as a network of integrated intelligences, we look at human and artificial primarily, and how we most effectively bring them together. But as we've seen, humans don't tend to like being told what to do by computers. And the way that technology is often undermining people's control, sense of agency over their work, I believe is going to become more problematic, particularly as we think about adding a artificial intelligence to a person's job, to a human intelligence to produce something. It is early days. It's fairly early from a scientific research point of view. There is some good work out there over the last 5 years. Actually, probably the last three the most, but it's still a relatively new field. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with the Uber case that was highlighted in about, I think it was 2016, if memory serves me, in Harvard Business Review about the Uber drivers who were really unhappy about algorithms telling them what to do. That was sort of an early case, but I'm seeing more and more of this where people feel disenfranchised from their work and the process of work and the discretionary decision-making process and so forth because of the way the technology is supporting them. And it does support them, but some tweaks in job design are really important to make sure that it's used effectively. So that would be the first bit that I see that there is an ethical dilemma for us, particularly as HR, but business leaders. How do we design our workplaces so they remain human, so we don't disenfranchise our people, so we do continue to engage and motivate individuals rather than relying fully on artificial intelligence? The other thing is really around data. And I know everyone's so excited about analytics and has been for years, and I don't see it dying anytime soon.
Big data has been around.
Oh, yeah. But we got excited about big data. You don't hear about it so much anymore. But analytics, if you've got analytics in your CV, you can pretty much guarantee a job these days, even if all you can do is use Tableau, which is good, don't get me wrong. But what I see is in many businesses, the way we are using data and the data that we are using. And this is the ethical dilemma I see between what we could use and what we should use. So we all know that the digital footprint or a workplace digital footprint of anyone in working for a company, the data that their data exhaust belongs to the organization. That data, digital footprint is the company's. And we know that because most jurisdictions, that is both the law, most employment contracts, it is agreed, plus it is during work time and they are using workplace tools. So to create it. But this digital footprint is huge. And the way that it is being used is can change an employee feels comfortable for us using. I'll give you an example. We could nudge managers, or we could identify flight risks. Mm-hmm. Great resignation. We can identify flight risks. And we could provide nudges, behavioral nudges, to managers and to others that is directed at encouraging that person to stay. Now, that degree of influence, that degree of to manipulate a situation, is that appropriate? A lot of HR people say, yeah, give me that technology, please. But, you know, I speak to employees about it and they're like, well, is that undermining my free will? Do I deserve to know that that's what's going on? Mm. It's not the question of can they legally use the data. It is, should they be using it and how should they be using it in the workplace? If there is benefit for an employee, most employees tend to be more comfortable. So the two things that people really want, transparency. They want to know that this tool is being used, this data is being used in this way. And the second is they want to benefit from it. They want to get something out from it personally. Not necessarily in a professional sense, but as an individual, they want to benefit in some way. I think when it comes to how we use data to influence, to manipulate, to make decisions, we're rarely thinking about what would the employee expect, what should we be doing. So I think that there's a lot more we can do over and above the law, over and above the privacy requirements, which, let's be honest, we're all complying with, and if we're not, well, we're way behind the times. This is not a debate about privacy. It's a debate about over and above what is legal, what data should we be using and how should we be using it in the course of work to influence or manipulate a situation or a human being for an outcome desired by the organization, even if it is at the expense of the human. I'm seeing this a few times. So it's an interesting area that I think we've only just started to scratch the surface on. And as HR, a lot of HR people are becoming much more sort of tech savvy, and they're asking the companies, the vendors, these difficult questions about the technology, about the data that it uses. And then they're having the conversations internally. What should we do? Is this appropriate? Do we believe this is appropriate? Rather than just getting excited because it's going to end up reducing the turnover.
Yeah. And when you were giving this example, I literally had goosebumps. It's so similar. I don't know if you've seen this documentary on Netflix, Social Dilemma, on how it slowly influences us. So it doesn't tell us what to be doing, but it monitors what we are doing on our social media. And then based on the preferences, it starts changing our way of thinking. And it's very subtle. We don't realize that it's changing this. And the whole documentary is about, where's the fine line of ethics? It's legal. There's nothing wrong with it. People agreed to it. They're not using the data for anything else, but they're slowly influencing results of big events. They're connecting you to only people. And I mean, the way you were saying it, I was like, I've never thought of it from that angle. And it's such a critical angle to have as well, that yes, data is everything, but how are you using that data to the advantage of the company, but also the transparency for the human? They are aware that this is what it will be used for.
It's a funny one, Shubh. The more I've learned, and I've been learning about technology and data, it's probably coming up to a decade now. Time seems to have run away from me. But whatever I've learned, I'm always trying to think, what does this mean for us as HR people? What does this mean for people in business? And because it's not me getting all excited about the technology, though it's easy to do, or about the data, but what does it mean for us? And as consumers, and HR, we used to think about employees like consumers. There's a lot of the same approaches, marketing approaches that we'll use, communications and so forth. But very rarely have we thought about it around the use of the technology, simply because it's been legal. And as long as we're on the right side of the privacy laws, we tend not to go any further into it. But like you say, it does give you goosebumps. Once you think that, did my manager actually do that because they care or because they were told to by the tool? We don't know. We are aware of the influence of our behavior as a consumer or a user, but are we fully aware in the workplace? And I would suspect that the answer is actually no, depending on what companies are using what tools. But we really do, HR and business really need to scratch the surface and get under. I just have a icky feeling that one day and in the not too distant future, we will see the same backlash from employees over the way we have chosen to use their data and the purpose of that usage, that if we do not get ahead of it, all the gains we've made around engagement and motivation, discretion, all of that will just evaporate, will just disappear, because the expectations of employees will move faster than the legislation and faster than the way out, the way we use and approach technology and data in the workplace. So yeah, watch this space. Hopefully it will.
Wow, I know you've given so many pointers here to be thinking about for everyone, whether you're an employee, employer, leader, HR, business side. We need to come together as a community and decide how we want things to go from here. So I actually have a question from one of the viewers. They're asking if there's any example of a company that uses data about their employees to create better career paths for them. Have you come across anyone yet?
Yeah, look, this is a great question. I actually had a conversation with someone this morning talking about skills audits and how do we actually help map the development of skills for the careers of individuals as well as the needs of business. I'll be honest, I don't know of a company doing this really well. Well, you know, there's a lot of sort of smaller companies that are using fairly basic tech and right down to Excel to be able to understand and to map. But my conversation with an old colleague this morning was literally about the lack of the technology. I guess doing a skills audit, but being able to map and continue to evolve those skills so that individuals, as they evolve, whether they're with the company or exit, because remember, companies, if they're using it, usually they hold on to the data. We've got this sort of data ownership dichotomy that we also need to resolve, because if we're doing it for individuals, they need to take that data with them. Typically, if it's done by HR, it sits there. So there's this strange situation where the companies have tools that are closed, that are isolating just for what they need. You know, the career, we've all done it. We all career path, only the people we want, only the jobs that are useful for us, rather than doing it for everyone, but having a tool that is transportable by individuals that we. So, yeah, it's an interesting space. I wish I could say yes. I've just noticed a number of these key issues sort of cropping up, and more so now that we've moved to a skills debate and the need for people to be more mobile, even as internal mobility. Yeah, but that's the other thing that people are looking at. How do I get people to be more mobile within my organization to better utilize their skills or to develop them further, either as a linear career or in another area? So, sorry, I don't have a great example. Just ideas about the challenge.
and that's what this is all about, the challenge. And I think we were discussing about career path and the skills. So I think it would be a good time to seg into that into a bit more detail. According to you, which skills, technical or soft skills, are most important for a professional to get into senior leadership roles in the whole future of work? So I'm tweaking my regular question to make it more relevant to what we've been discussing today.
Yeah. Do you know, humans, if I had to vote on human or technical skills, I'd vote human every time for leaders. And I don't want to specify, we can all look at World Economic Forum and all sorts for the list of the human skills, but human skills are absolutely crucial. And very important, not just from a leadership point of view, but what we as humans bring to the workplace. The other ones, and this is still, I'm going to change my answer, so come back to your future question. Two things. It is the ability to bring disparate ideas, disparate areas of knowledge, bodies of knowledge together. What for that particular, where are they playing at the intersection? Rather than being a specialist in one area, what can they bring together? What two or three things can they bring together? And that facilitates them to collaborate with others so that the strength of the business overall is a lot tighter. If we think, you know, at the moment, most people are very specialist in their own role. Think of your everyone in the senior team being able to collaborate because they're multiple specialists. I think that offers organizations a winning game. And today, I always think if HR and IT can play together well, collaborate effectively, that's a really strong organization. When you get the technical and the people right, you're in a winning seat. And the third thing I'd do is be courageous to do something completely new and to lead new, not just personally, but to be able to lead new things and new ways of operating. It's really easy for us to just make sure we're doing what we've always done well in a business, effecting change and having the courage to lead something new, untested, untried, unknown. It is risky, yes, but that therein lies one of the paradoxes of leadership. So I'd say courage to try something new would be the other area. If we're thinking of future of work.
Yeah, as you gave an example, when we started this podcast about the courage of accepting things which were out of the ordinary, the linear path, etc. And you touched something about organizations where the HR and technology work really well together and can collaborate. Would you have any example, personal, doesn't have to be recent, where you've seen that kind of collaboration happening and coming out with winning success?
Yeah, I don't want to mention any names.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Live. I haven't got anybody's permission. But look, I'll just talk about an example, so I filter through so I make sure I don't give the game away. I think the most interesting collaborations I've seen are where companies are building their HR tech ecosystems. So they've moved to the cloud and the organization, rather than spending huge on the core HRIS, taking the budget very low on that and looking at the other sort of plug and play tools that they can use that are going to solve specific problems. So these are companies that know that a best fit ecosystem is going to be the winning formula, rather than just something that everybody else has got and making it as lean as possible. That is not the winning game anymore. But to be able to do that, to be able to understand how to the security aspects, how to plug and play, whether there's ability from a cloud perspective, from a data sharing point of view, from a compatibility point of view, to be able to stitch things together appropriately with either APIs, robotic process automation on the front end, or application program interfaces at the back end, so that you're creating something that is not only unique but best fit for the solution of the time, and to be able to switch it out. Mm-hmm. So to do that, though, HR need enough of a language to be able to talk to their IT about what it is that they are trying to accomplish and what is possible technically. But IT also need to understand why HR is doing what it needs to do. So if they understand the focus areas, whether it's well-being, learning, and remote working, they tend to be the top three at the moment. So I have seen a couple of companies, they're medium-sized organizations. I haven't seen the big guys have sort of spent all their money on one of the big names, we all know who they are, and the big HRIS, and that's kind of that. The medium-sized organizations have done really well. I could think of one in particular, and they work very closely to make sure that this ecosystem is agile, secure, and helpful. It solves current problems for both their employees and their business. And because it is agile, they're able to switch tools out much more effectively. We're talking sort of 3-6 months. We're not talking 2-3 years like it used to be for the switch out of old technologies. So there's a couple, but mostly medium size, and they have the vocabulary of one another. They understand the lexicon. I wouldn't have said either are expert in one another's. They just have enough knowledge to be able to converse and to collaborate.
Yeah. Absolutely. Collaboration is the golden word, which has come out quite a bit in all the conversations. And I just realized we are running out of time. So I want to get some closing comments from you. I didn't even realize we were so into the conversation. So what advice would you give to people entering workforce now to be able to have an exciting career like yourself, considering that workplace, career, etc., they are changing definitions so rapidly?
Just say yes to opportunity. Look for opportunity and say yes to it. Don't forget traditional. And I'm sorry if your parents are saying, yes, that's the way to do it, or job, just forget about it. It will matter. It mattered a bit when I was young it matters less now, and by the time you're my age, it'll matter not at all. So just don't worry about linear traditional career paths. Find an interesting, exciting opportunity and go for it. Add additional strings to your bow. Think about, you know, we can all become experts in one area and compete, but compete where you are playing at the intersection of two or three ideas. It increases your ability to be likelihood of being unique and being able to secure specific jobs, because there are less people. So there's far less people to compete with me in the technology, data, people space than there is just in the people space. So think about what your combination might look like. And with that in mind, keep learning continuously. Your evolution is critical. My generation, if we have not figured it out yet, then we are the dinosaurs. Evolution of our career is a continuous and ongoing, right to the day you say, I quit, I'm retiring. So continue that learning, keep building those combination, and have fun doing it. That's it.
Have fun doing it. That is such a beautiful mantra to have for your career. Thank you so much for your wisdom, Pip. Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you for everyone who joined us today, and to our listeners who are listening it as a podcast later on. Don't forget to follow Pip on LinkedIn. I'm going to tag her LinkedIn profile in the notes, so make sure that you follow her and find out everything exciting in the world of future of work. So thank you very much, and thanks a lot again, Pip.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.alcottglobal.com. and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest update first. If you are listening to a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5 stars work best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do or who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.